Hey everyone, this is Chaplain Denny with the South Carolina National Guard. Welcome to the Chap Chat. And today's guest is a guy who's near and dear to my heart and probably one of the guys that has the biggest heart in the Guard. And his name is Sergeant First Class Carlos Vargas. And I've known, how long have I known you for now, Carlos?
Probably 10 years.
10 years, yeah.
Roughly.
Yeah. And what I admire about you is, again, your heart. You feel deeply and care deeply for the soldiers.
Absolutely.
And we have a lot of people in our organization that do that, but you live it, you breathe it, and you do it.
Wow. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you. So what made you decide to join the South Carolina National Guard?
So I wanted to become a citizen back in early 2000s. Military service was what was a way.
Okay.
I was born in Costa Rica. Came here when I was 13, back in 1998. I was blessed with a lot of great opportunities in school, graduating, my family, my sister, my brother, who was actually in the Guard. We were blessed with a lot of great things. So I said, well, let me do military service. And I guess I'll get a little degree in between. And so that's pretty much the driving factor.
Okay.
Because that made a fee of about $2,000+ go away.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, pretty substantial.
Yeah.
I get a little, you know, get a part-time job and do it for 6 years and get what I want out of it. And that was the driving factor.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. And this part-time job has now turned into a full-time lifestyle.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
19 years later.
Wow.
Yes, sir.
Well, so how does, and maybe it didn't, but how does moving from Costa Rica to the United States and now serving in uniform, how has that shaped your view of military service?
So when I was growing up, I think I was 8, 9 years old. I'll never forget. It looked like a Black Hawk landed 5 minutes from my house. And I just got to see the soldiers come off and I was just like, wow. And I got to live in Costa Rica, which things are not quite the same as the United States. Mm-hmm. So being able to be in a completely different country, different language, the culture, something as small as standing too close to somebody in the grocery store here is not very common.
Or right.
It's almost like unheard of.
Right. We have our personal space.
Right. The bubble.
Yeah.
In Costa Rica culture, that's normal, or like kissing somebody on the cheek. Hey, good to see you, you know, friends, and just like that is. But here it's more like you just wave, hey, you know,
right,
that kind of stuff. But I kind of took that and kind of took the good stuff out of it. And I was able to see other soldiers, other friends that have joined and made something good out of it.
Right.
So I came into the Guard as a, not a given heart, but trying to take the most out of it,
mm-hmm,
by making the most opportunity out of it. And I kind of took it as a challenge because I don't have family in the military that I can say, well, my dad did this, my uncle did this. I just wanted to see where it took me, just for fun. And I learned that I can make anything as long as I'm willing to do the work.
Right.
That's what it boils down to.
So when we talk about that American dream,
mm-hmm,
that's really what you've pursued and done.
Absolutely.
And by the way, if you ever want to give me a kiss on the cheek, just like back your old days in Costa Rica, I'm here for you, buddy.
Gracias.
De nada. De nada. So what drives you, though? Because you're one of the harder workers that I know, and you put customer service at the forefront of everything that you do. So what's the driving factor behind that?
Long time ago, I used to work for Bank of America, and a manager told me once, you never really know what people are going through those doors. They could have the worst day of their life. They could have just got something bad happened to them. But that smile or that, hey, how are you? It's going to make a difference. And I kind of took that to heart. I didn't see the value back then. This was 19-year-old me compared to 39-year-old me now. And I see what's the difference. For me, it's a pride thing. Not to be the best, but I like the challenge. That somebody tells me, hey, I don't know if this can be done. So I like to listen in and just kind of go through different scenarios and either say, yeah, we can do that. That's easy. And just get it done. But us is my family. My girls, I don't tell them too much about what I do. I just want to be able to, my girls and my wife, to walk away from this knowing that her husband or their dad was really good at what he did. Mm-hmm. And to me, I take the reputation or the trust of people, I hold that dearly to my heart. Because somebody trusts me with something, whether it's personal driven or life driven, that means the world to me.
Right.
I can't put a value on that. I'm not a chaplain assistant. I don't have a degree on psychology, anything like that. But if you trust me with something, I take that to heart.
Yeah.
Because to me, that means that you trust me with something, and it's up to me to either make the best of it and take care of it or walk you through different routes or avenues, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. So to me, it's the trust factor.
Yeah.
I want people to trust me. And I also take pride in what I do. I want to make sure that I show up and I give 110%.
Right. Yeah, and you do. And that trust, I get it, right? When someone comes into my office and they're having a bad day, they just need someone to talk to.
Yes.
For me, that's a sacred time. That's a sacred, it's a very sacred opportunity because someone is trusting you enough.
Absolutely.
To be able to come and share a problem, share a secret, share something that's weighing heavy on their heart. And by the way, you don't need to be a chaplain or a chaplain assistant to do
You're
that.
Right.
You do that.
Yes.
And that's a very sacred moment. So
absolutely.
For people to do that with you, that's amazing.
Thank you.
Amazing. So you are AGR, and for those out there that may not know, AGR stands for Active Guard Reserve.
Correct.
And essentially they are National Guards men or women, mm-hmm. that are Title 10
30,
or Title 32,
32,
but serve just as an active duty soldier would, but just in the Guard.
Correct.
And we have a full-time contingency of people, mm-hmm. Whether it's technician, contractor, or AGR,
right.
to support our M-Day force. And so Carlos is AGR.
Right.
And AGR is a 24-7.
That's right.
You're expected to be on call 24-7.
Absolutely.
So how do you work through that work-life balance? That's got to be a difficult thing.
I'll be honest with you, that's one of the hardest thing because I'm such a nurse sometimes that I think of the problem and sometimes I'm like, well, 5 more minutes. When I look at the clock, it's after 5, it's 5:10, 5:15. Or I'm at home and I'm like, oh, let me take my computer out. Oh, I know. This is it. This is how we can do it. So me, I have a struggle with that part because it's hard to explain, but the best way I can say is I struggle with that part because sometimes it's hard to shut off the switch from work to home. Recently, I learned that somebody told me, and I looked at him differently because he's been in AO in different leadership positions. He told me, Carlos, you got to shut it down. Mm. You got to work and go home to your family. And it's like, I don't know why, how he said it, the way he said it, just kind of sink in. And I also asked someone else, how do you do it, sir? Because you have all these responsibilities. And how do you shut it off? These are people with 20 plus years of service. And they're like, it's hard sometimes.
Sure.
And unfortunately, my family has suffered some of the consequences. So what I mean by that is, yeah, I've been home, but I haven't been mentally home in the sense, because I either stress about something that I forgot to do, or go like, oh man, tomorrow I need to do 3, 2, 5, 5, you know, kind of stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So something I'm trying to get better at it, to learn that I have to work within the normal working hours, and after work is after work, and I just go home and focus on my family. I pretty much have to, I don't say force myself, but force myself to shut it off.
Sure.
Recently.
Mm-hmm.
Because I learn more and more that at the end of the day, it's an honor to do this job. I show up every day and I do the best that I can, but I need to hit a reset button. And my reset button has been my family, my girls, my wife, because that puts me in a different mindset. When I go home, it's just like, it's different. It's not the stress level of work or worrying about something getting done. It's just something like, we need to do laundry. And I kind of use that as an outing, or the girls might need help with something, or the bikes need some WD-40 because it's just making weird sounds, you know, or the wives just looks at bags and say, yep, this needs to go into a garage. And, you know, you're doing different kind of manual labor, but it's, to me, it's refreshing because it kind of resets me back into what I need to be the next day.
Right.
So it's hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a difference between being home and being present.
Yes. 1000%.
And that presence part I struggle with as well, is, you know, just being present for and be in the moment.
Yes.
With your family.
Absolutely.
Or wherever you, or whether it's with your friends or whatever you're doing, just mm-hmm. be present in that moment.
Something as small as my wife is telling me a story, and this something, it's man nature to be fixers. But I learned with wives, sometimes they just want you to listen and either ask a couple questions. That way there's that interaction.
Sure.
And I learned that from a good friend of ours, good old Rudy.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you have to ask just one question, and that way develops the conversation. It makes your significant other go like, wow, they're really present.
Right.
And I tried a few times and I laugh about it because it's so simple, but it's so meaningful and so true.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you ask, so how's that make you feel?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's like, yes, winning the Super Bowl at home.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And to me, the challenge is because I'm a fixer.
Right.
You know, I say, hey, this is broken. I pull out my Gorilla Glue and put it together. I say, hey, good to go. Have a nice day. At home, I have to be a listener, which is, it's hard. Not hard, but it's just from one opposite to another.
Yeah.
And you know, we're like, okay, you're stressed. Let's go out to eat. Let's fix it, you know, right now. But sometimes they just want to unload and just tell us the stuff. And like you said, how does that make you feel? Wow. Rudy told me that, the whole wow.
Yeah.
Like sometimes you know how to react. And I look at my wife, it's like, that is preposterous. That's just, I don't know what to say to that.
Yeah, yeah.
And do the whole face thing. And she goes like, yeah, I agree. Isn't it crazy? I was like, absolutely.
Oh, wow. He gets me.
Yeah, yeah, he didn't open the door. Or, right, you know, whatever the case is,
yeah,
and you're like, yeah, that's just, maybe you had the worst crazy day at work and, you know, you got to leave that behind, and home is home.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
Our families, they might not wear the uniform, but they sacrifice a lot.
They do. They do.
Yeah, drill weekends here and there, ATs here and there, but they paying a lot of the dues for us. And I'm grateful to have great wife and great kids. They understand, but I mean, my kids did not sign up, but sometimes they have to pay the dues of being away because it's just the nature of the duty.
Mm-hmm.
God forbid something happens tomorrow. Like you said, a phone call comes in and, well, it's 2 a.m, hey, you know,
right,
you need to come in, we need to work through things and whatever the case is.
Right, right. Yeah, and they do pay a price, and we don't always acknowledge that. So I appreciate you sharing that.
Absolutely.
So what is it that help when difficulties strike Carlos,
mm-hmm.
right? When you're struggling with life or struggling with this work-life balance or struggling with stress, what is it that you hold on to that allows you to continue to move forward and continue to be resilient?
Excellent question. I have to say, I reach back to my faith. I have a tribe of about 5 people that I trust dearly. And I have my my chaplain from my old battalion, for example, that I reach out to him for the scripture.
Mm-hmm.
I like the scripture because even though it's written in a very hard way to figure out sometimes, I love the fact that he sends me stuff when I'm struggling and I look at it and I was like, I reflect on it and I just like, wow. You know, so that helps me tremendously. Also, I cry, be honest with you.
Okay. Purges a lot.
I'm a sentimental guy. When I get overwhelmed, I don't necessarily drink or do anything crazy. I just cry.
Yeah.
And I just let it go. But I also call a few of my friends and it's like, look, this is what's going on. What do I do? Or what would you do? What do you think? And like I said, those are like, might be 5 people at the most.
Right.
That I let in, but I lean heavily on those 5 people.
That's good.
Because they're the ones that get me through the day or through the tough times.
So what is it about those 5 for people that may be listening and struggling to find their own tribe?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So what is it about those 5 that you trust? And also when you first went to them, because it does take a measure of trust to be able to step out and say, all right, I'm going to decide to trust Carlos with this.
Right.
What were some of those traits that they have, and what was the vulnerability you felt when you finally decided to say, you know what, I'm going to share this with someone? That's a difficult thing.
It is. I'm a very simple, humble human being. When I meet somebody, I don't size them up. I just get the vibe for trust interaction over the years. I've known one of them for almost 20 years, quite a few others for the past 5 years. So I interacted with them enough where I get that gut feeling or vibe that I can trust them, because I know I can go to them and for one, they're going to tell me what I don't want to hear.
Mm-hmm. But that's important.
Yes, because I don't like to go to the ones that are going to say, well, you know what? You're right. I know me well enough to know that I need different views sometimes to figure things out. And those people like that are the ones I trust because they have life experiences or they went through it on their own stuff, similar stuff to what I'm going through. And that way we can share stuff. And that way I know, okay, you know what? It's okay because they've been dealing with that stuff before.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, to me, it's a trust thing. Like I said, it's just something that builds. It's not whether to let me hold their credit cards or anything crazy like that. It's just more like the vibe that I get from them. Like when I mentioned it first time, it's like, you know what? Chaplain Danny, he's a good one. I can trust him because it's just that vibe. It has nothing to do with being a chaplain. To me, it's about being a person.
Mm-hmm.
Like I say, it's all about being a person.
The authenticity, exactly. Of humanity.
Yeah. Yes, that's it.
Yeah.
That's the qualities of things that I don't say I look for, but that's kind of what I observe. And everybody's entitled to be different. Whatever they want to do is, hey, you do you. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's just, can I trust you in my dear secrets? Can I be vulnerable to you? And I have been vulnerable to them quite a few times. Shared them everything. Cried right there with them. And they kind of, they walk the dog with me. And they kind of bring me back and point out the things I'm missing out. They tell me the hard truth I don't want to hear. But again, I go to them for those things.
Sure.
To keep me, so I don't let my emotions make a decision. To me, it's important to make I try my best to make a sound decision based on the facts and kind of what's right for me or what feels right for me at the time.
Right.
Versus act out of anger that, oh, I'm really mad because X, Y, Z, you know?
Sure. So for those that may feel uncomfortable being uncomfortable, so what when you... It requires courage to take a step to be able to trust someone.
It does.
And so there's a risk reward that, at yes. least in my mind, that I always play out. Like, what's the risk in being vulnerable and talking to someone about an issue I have? So how do you regulate that? How do you decide that? And how did you finally step out to be able to share that with someone?
So I will share kind of what led me down the path that I took. So I went to a military school about, I think it was 2021. And that was around the time that the Afghanis refugees were in that base. And I deployed to Afghanistan, deployed to Iraq, and as soldiers, we don't have feelings. We want peace. And when I was there for 4 weeks.
At the school.
And I got to see them. And it just, when I got home, my wife noticed that I wasn't me. And I'm like, okay. So she pretty much looked me in the eye and said, look, you need to get some help. Because if you don't, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm just going to have you committed. I don't think I was showing the risk behaviors or anything like that. I wasn't like drinking or anything like that. It was just, I guess, I was not the normal me. And you've been around me long enough to know that I'm not very loud or chatty, but I'm kind of out there. And I guess I was different. So I approached somebody here that I used to work with. I was like, look, I'm struggling with PTSD. And she put me in contact with a provider for Jackson. I call him and I told him everything. I was like, look, this is what I'm feeling. I didn't think I was going to have that much of a hard time, but I guess I am. And the fact that my wife told me that I needed to get some help or assistance, it's kind of when the light bulb went on. And she actually called one of my five people that she knows that I'm very close with him. And she told him, like, look, so me and him, we talked. And that's the kind of stuff we haven't talked about ever. But we open up to each other.
Right.
I also open up to my supervisor. And at that point, I realized that the saying of it's okay not to be okay, it's okay.
Right.
You know, right. But because this uniform that we put on, it's kind of sometimes it feels like a cape that you kind of have the superpowers that you don't feel stuff, you don't think about stuff. The stuff that you deal with deployments, you kind of put on the back burner and you don't really deal with it. But fast forward in time, here I am dealing with stuff because I deployed in 2011. To Afghanistan, and that was the rough deployment.
Sure.
And fast forward and seeing the Afghanis there, it was a difficult time, but I realized that if somebody that loves me as much as my wife does tell me I need help,
Yeah.
So I went to a person that I trust dearly. And it's like, look, this is what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I need help.
Good.
And I got that, you know, behavioral help assistance. And I was skeptical at first because I was like, man, I don't want to get medical out. But I learned that as long as I'm getting the treatment I need, and it's okay. Also, this was during the time I was changing positions from here to another position, and I was extremely stressed because dealing with that, dealing with this, I was like, how's that going to work? So I told my new boss, I was like, look, sir, I'm okay, but this is what I'm dealing with. And I also known him for many, many years. And he said, no, that's fine.
Good.
You do what you need to do. Good. You just tell me when you got to do it and you do it. So getting therapy with some of the experts we have in the National Guard was tremendous because I was able to navigate through that stuff. But as far as that goes, I can't really explain it other than the you have to want the change or you have to want to seek it.
Mm, that's important.
And to me, the big thing is not being okay, it's okay. But you have to kind of be committed, follow through, get your appointments, go to behavioral health, go to therapy. If you happen to need to be medicated, cool, get medicated. If not, just behavioral health helps you tremendously. I'm a firm believer that if you talk about it, you can't let it go. Navigate through it. The mind is a beautiful thing that you can kind of learn to retrain, but you have to go through those steps. And those steps for me might look like 57 steps. For somebody like you, might look like 112.
Right.
All of us are different.
Sure.
And we just have to accept that. Going through all that stuff, I learned that there's a lot of us around here that deal with stuff. We just do a good job at brushing it off.
Yeah.
And leaving it at the door. And we just, I don't want to say we're fake, but we kind of...
Well, I think we all wear a mask.
We do.
Right? And then when we go to the IMRXs and we have to do the PHAs,
right,
we know how to answer the questions in such a way that it's not going to raise any red flags.
Yes. You're good.
Yeah. I'm good. Yeah.
Thumbs up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Drive on, sir.
Yes, sir.
Great guard day. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so we have these sayings, right, that are just platitudes. But, you're right, and I appreciate you sharing the fact that you were willing to get help for the behavioral health struggles that you had.
Absolutely.
And has it helped?
Tremendously.
Tremendously. Okay.
Oh, my God. My relationship, my wife improved drastically. My stress level is still there, but I'm naturally somebody who stresses, but it's better because something as small as sometimes I used to feel that even though I was around people, I felt like I was the only person in the room. But fast forward and not being able to conquer some of those challenges to keep things making progress. The biggest thing I can say, I don't set myself a goal of, hey, I wanna do this by this. I literally take it one day at a time. And if I have a oh snap food day, I pick up the phone, one of those five people. Hey, Bo.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Right.
Hey, man, I need some help. Or this is what I'm going through. What do you think?
Yeah.
And they give me that feedback and it keeps me grounded. And I'm like, oh, Moza, you know. And I still attend my behavioral health appointments. I kind of want to keep myself tuned up. Like, I don't want to let it get bad. So I want to make sure that I'm dealing with things as they come.
Mm-hmm.
And that way I can unload my challenges or my stress and with that during that session and I can say, look, this is what's going on.
So it's almost a car analogy, preventive maintenance.
Yes.
Do the preventive maintenance along the way so you don't have a catastrophic transmission failure.
Absolutely. And 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we all walk around with rucksacks or bags, mm-hmm. backpacks. Some of our backpacks are 5 pounds. Some of our backpacks might be 1,000 pounds, depending on what day it is. We don't see that. But our facial expression, those around us notice that, wait a minute, that person is not the same that they used to be. And they'll end up eventually calling you and checking on you, which it happened to me. One of my good friends, he called me. He's like, hey, you're not the same. What's going on?
Yeah.
And, but I'm blessed to have those people that really know me, that say, wait a minute, this is not right. What's going on? And again, it's that trust that I had with that person. I'm like, yeah, this is what's going on. Boop. Share them everything. They're like, wow. And they just know what to say to make you feel better. And to me, that's just, you can't put a price on that.
And sometimes it's really not what they say. It's just that availability to have someone to be able to.
Yes.
That pressure cooker that you may be having, just to open that vent up a little bit to let some of that steam out. And they may not say anything, but yet they've said so much just by asking the question.
Yes. And going back to one of the questions you said, why do I treat people nice? That phone call that I got out of the blue, it meant the world to me, because somebody made time. And as humans, we want to feel that we matter to others. Some of us don't need to hear that, but it's nice sometimes that somebody walks up to you and say, you know what? You're doing fantastic. You're amazing. Not because you want to hear it, but it's just the timing of it. You go like, man.
Yeah.
You don't expect that. And you're like, wow.
It's just that validation that you're doing some things right.
Yeah. Matters. You know, it's like, you know what? It's okay. You know, and that's just, those are the little things that, to me, that matter, that you can't put a price on that stuff.
No, you can't.
I'd rather have that one quality friend like that that can call you out of the blue and say, are you okay? Than anything else. Because, I mean, with people like that, I don't need anything else. Oh, than my family, of course.
Instead of that one guy who's saying, hey, Carlos, I didn't get paid for last drill.
Yeah.
Can you imagine someone doing that
and
not even asking how you're doing?
I know. Well, you know.
Hypothetically, of course.
If that happened, soldiers are entitled to questions.
Yeah. Yeah, I felt bad. I'm like,
I know.
I'm like, Carlos, I'm coming to you with a problem, but I didn't even say, hey, are you okay?
Hey, I'm glad I was there to make it right. And because I was like, oh, snap. Of all the people I messed up pay, I almost messed up the tax pay. But kind of have
ooh.
To. Yeah, ooh. Well, yeah. So there I was. January drill. They told me to do ABC, but I ended up doing like BCD. And I was like, oops. I made a mistake. And they're like, well, can you recall it? So I called the pay office. They're like, oh, no, we can't do that. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to take some money back from the tax account. Ooh. But if we do it this way, 100% legal, we're good. Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
I was like, oh, thank you. Jesus, man. Talk about sweating.
Yeah, pucker.
Yeah.
Pucker a little fat. Yeah,
that's like, oh, well, it was nice working here. I
guess right.
There'll be another person sitting here next week.
And yet here you are.
Yeah, exactly.
Here. It worked out.
It worked out.
So the last question I have for you. And again, I appreciate your vulnerability and your willingness to share some of the struggles that you've been through and what you've done to be able to continue to operate at an optimum level. What would Carlos say to his younger self? What advice would you give that person?
don't put the job ahead of yourself or your family. Take pride in what you do. Show up every day, giving 110%. But make sure you make time for yourself. Something as small as just going to Target by the laundry section just because it smells good. I don't know. Something along those ways. Because you don't see the value of it, but your brain cannot always be go, go, go.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to decompress. I also will tell myself, don't let the feelings or problems compound over time. Where, as you said earlier, the pressure cooker goes off. And it's like danger close, like, oh, snap, something, you know what I mean? I will say, and as guys, it's kind of hard to talk about feelings sometimes because it's almost like we have to be a certain way, but it's okay to open up because you'll be surprised how many people had the same feelings or are struggling with the exact same thing or they figure something out that way. You get better. But that's pretty much what I would tell myself. Okay. Like, focus on yourself. Whatever makes you happy. Yeah. Like, just take your me time. I love the job. I'm proud to wear the uniform. But the job will be here way after we're gone.
Right. Army goes rolling along.
Army goes rolling along. Yeah. Exactly. And a lot of us show up here because the check is nice and just the benefits and whatever the case is. The Army will be here regardless whether we're still here.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? Our family, our loved ones, hopefully they're there standing in our house when we go home, when we hang this uniform up.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is not to sacrifice them because of your job.
Right.
Now, if you have to get mobilized, that's a whole different thing.
It is.
You know, but make sure you make your family, don't neglect your family. That'd be the other thing. Just, and like my kids or just most families, most wives don't really, or like at least my wife, don't want really nothing like expensive vacation. It's just something as small as, I don't know, let's go to the backyard and play. Let's go to a park. You know, something that build the memories where you have that quality time with the kids or get them a slushy.
Right.
You know, that, you know, something about slushy or ice cream. It's just little things like that.
Absolutely.
So that would be the biggest thing. Just find that fine balance earlier in the career versus later.
Gotcha.
That pays dividends.
That's great.
Absolutely.
That's great. My friend, well, thank you so much for being here with Chap Chat, and I look forward to going to Target and seeing a bunch of people just walking through the laundry aisle.
I'm telling you.
And the managers are going to be like, what the heck is going on? We got a bunch of people just sniffing the fabric softener.
See?
We used to eat Tide Pods, but yep. Now people are just sniffing the fabrics.
It smells good. Yeah. It's just so soothing.
But I joke, but because I love you.
I love you.
And I appreciate everything you've done, and thank you for your vulnerability and transparency. Absolutely. And for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
You make the difference, Carlos. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Chaplin.